Parsha point out that the is the first Jewish shidduch. You know, there was Avraham married Sarah, but they married each other presumably before they became Jewish. Pashas, they were married before Lepucha. Lepucha when they became Jewish. So it was a shidduch of two very wonderful individuals who were not yet Jewish. So the first shidduch of a Jew was that of Yitzchak Avinu. Chazal tell us that the necessity to find a special shidduch for Yitzchak Avinu was recognized by Avraham Avinu. He was very concerned. The whole future of the Jewish people rested on the success of this mission, and that's why he made Aliyah take a shvua.
Torah
is cooking time. Torah. Want to close the window? I don't
mind. Put a closer on the door now.
There you go. Yeah. So put it. Thank you, though. Thank you. I appreciate it. So he recognized the importance of this issue, and indeed, no one is Avraham Avinu in this room, but this is a decision which every person has to make, and it's what I consider to be the most important decision that a person makes in life, the most important decision, the decision about marriage. And it's very difficult. It's difficult, you know, when a person grows up, everything sort of goes normally, you know. You grow up, you go to school, your life sort of mapped out for you. You know, go here, go there, go this yeshiva, that yeshiva, this school, that school. Okay, whatever it is. So the differences, I'm not saying that there are also differences there too. But, you know, you sort of can go along, and on. You can go along, you know, with a group of other chaverim, or the chamidim, or the neighbors, friends, relatives. When it comes to the marriage, that's a very difficult decision. And it's a decision every person has to make by himself. And you can't get married because it's the popular thing to marry this one or that one. It's just a one-on-one decision. And it's a decision of a lifetime. It's a decision which has to be made by Shem Shammai. We're learning Ebenezer this year. The opening line in Ebenezer tells us that a person is required to get married. We quoted one of our shiurim, and I may have even mentioned to you. Tell me if I do. I won't repeat it. That the mechabes and the siman aleph the balak, that a person is required to get married. Today lifros velirbo, Hashem Shemayim. Maybe I didn't mention it to you. So the Vilna Gaon there on the Bir Agro. In the very beginning, in Siman Aleph of Ebenezer, says that this is a reference to a Mishnah at the end of Tainus, more end of Tainus, where there are three types of women who are trying to vie for the attention of the men. Tu B'Av, the famous Tu B'Av then. So there are three kinds. There are those who are the Yofio, the pretty one, Tnu and Etan B'Yofi. Can each other the yoke? That's, or let's say, when accentuate the positive. They're very beautiful, so they tell the boys, look at me. I mean, look for beauty. But that's a woman for beauty. And there were those who were rich, and they had a lot of fancy jewelry. So they said, to look at the jewelry, can each other the takshitim? Woman is for jewelry. And the miyukosos, the ones who came from a good family, they say, and each other the bond. That primary purpose of marriage is to have a family. And the Mechaber, by saying they live for deliverance, is in effect paskening, like the group of the like that understanding, as the Shem Shamayim, which is live for deliverance for the purpose of mitzvah, and not necessarily the Yofi or the Tavshitim. And on that, The Vilna Gaon is quoted by saying, "Sheker achen behevel ayofi, ish yiras Hashem ishes halo." What is achen ayofi? Sounds like it's synonymous. No. So the Gaon says that yofi is intrinsic beauty. Intrinsic beauty. Someone is beautiful by somehow some kind of objective standard. I don't know how you measure that either, but all right, whatever objective standard. I guess you look at a picture. A picture doesn't show anything about who the person really is. This is some kind of objective standard. Okay. So what's chayim? But T.S. and no say chayim v'ene korolah. So the Gemara says, "Magila Esther Yirak Rokas out." Esther was, when you grew up, they had a picture of Esther when she was green, because Yirak Rokas out. But that's the relation. Yirak Rokas means yellow. Yirak Rokas means green, so it says Yirak means yellow. So Esther was yellow, and she wasn't so pretty. She's yellow, she didn't have a nice complexion, she didn't have a nice color. But she was known as chayim. So she has chayim. What does chayim mean? Something which is not directly the physical beauty itself, but something external to it. It could be tachshitim. You know, a lot of you look pretty ugly, but you put on enough jewels, you know, it's the cover of everything. And you have enough charm to cover everything. So there's something external. So we say, Sheker Achein Balayopi, Isha Yiras Hashem, Isha Salah, that's Yiras Hashem, and you try to have even kind of the Kuru. The Gaon is also quoted as saying, Isha Yiras Hashem, Isha Salah. Not just in the Yiras Hashem. Once you have Yiras Hashem, it's a on everything, including the chayim, including the yofi. Keep it in mind, the person, you know, has to be happy with the person he's marrying, not just from the perspective of Yiras Hashem, which is the most important, but also from the perspective of the chayim and the yofi. So if a woman you can't look at, you want me to be a tzaddik. My rabbi's going to be a tzaddik. I can't stand looking at her when I marry her anyway. That's ridiculous. That's against the Gemara. Also, the Adam the Kasha, Isha Asher Yirena, Shenema. You know, the Asher Yirena Kamocha. You shouldn't see something which you can't handle. You can't look at her. You can't look at her. You can't marry her. And if you can look at her, you can't talk to her. She has no charm and no wit and no there's no communication. No, if again, you can't marry her. So you have to have the other thing, but your Shemaim is a prerequisite. I thought the Gaon says chat in what we just read, the famous Rashi. Hine noyo dati kishi yifas mara ot. So it says in the Rashi that Avraham Avinu didn't know that Sarah was yifas mara until that time, and it went out to Mitzrayim. So you know, when I was in yeshiva, they taught us, you know, Avraham was a big tzaddik, he never looked at his wife. Avraham never looked at his wife. Come on, what kind of husband was that? Never looked at his wife. That's doesn't have the part to understand. So the Vilna Gaon to the Falun shot. Of course he looked at his wife. Of course he knew his wife was beautiful. But the question was, why was she beautiful? Was she beautiful because she made herself beautiful? You know, with her wit, with her charm, with her, maybe she didn't make up. I don't know what she used. She used things to make herself look beautiful. That's what he thought. If that was the case, when it would be appropriate to look ugly, she'd make herself look ugly. I mean, no problem. Just, you know, take away the charm, and take away the jewelry, and take away the makeup, and she'll look, you know, her good old ugly self. No problem. Now, the Avraham Avinu, who was a time to look ugly, because Sarah is now in very big danger of being taken away by Paro. So presumably Sarah didn't do anything to make herself look beautiful, but you know what? She looks beautiful anyway. Never. She looks beautiful anyway. That's what the Gaon says. Hine no yodati, isha yifas mara. It's yofi. Till now I thought it was only chen. Now I see it's yofi. Not that I never looked at it. I always looked at it. But you always thought it was, you know, it could be some other thing. As can't every hagro. So we have to understand the importance of this search, which is a very, very important part of life, and has to be undertaken with Shem Shammai. And the paradigm, the lesson, the model lesson is that of this week's parasha, Parashas Chayitzot. So there's a prerequisite. Before a person begins looking for a shidduch, getting what we call yesterday the parasha, but before before that, he has to first daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's the first thing that's done over here. Avraham Avinu is davening to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Even Eliezer, when he's about to make his move, also davening to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We see constant tefillah. The Gemara tells us, how can you spell kol chosid le'et mitzo? So the Gemara tells us, le'et mitzo zu isha. When the person is looking to for this mitziah to find his mate, he is required to, if he's a chosid, he's required to daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Everyone has to be a chosid here. I know this doesn't mean chassidim with a capital ches, you know, with a, who wears grimer. This is a chosid, someone who is devout, someone who understands the importance of this faithful decision he's about to make. So you have to daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He shouldn't. He should send you in the right way, right? As we read in this context, in the refrain of this week's parasha, in Chani, the Derech Emes, Hashem said in the right way. This is critical. We know in today's world, no, it's no secret in this world. Everyone knows that the Orthodox community, the Torah community, has been hit hard by broken marriages. It's not a secret. I mean. Maybe it is a secret. The secret for you is being young men, Baruch Hashem, you don't know that ever any different. And that's the secret. You know, unfortunately, there's divorce, more divorce, broken engagements, which is a halbatar. But you don't know, how can you know? You weren't born yet. You don't know that when I was growing up, and it was unheard of. I didn't possibly know that. In the late 50s, I'll give you an example. In the late 50s, I moved, that's how I can put it in my mind, I moved from Brooklyn to Queens. That was very young, before Bar Mitzvah. And I was moved in, we davened for a while, regularly, in a very big shul, called the Young Israel of Kew Gardens Hill. Big shul, you ever been in that shul? Hundreds and hundreds of people there, it was full already then, it was a shul of folk. And there were whispered rumors that in one corner of the room, there was a particular man who was getting divorced. It was divorced, maybe, once. Out of hundreds and hundreds of people. And this was the norm. We grew up, we didn't know what divorce was like. It was a freakish thing. It happened, we knew it happened, we learned about it from Chumash, and we knew right about the history books, and we knew it. But if you do go around a group of hundreds of people, you wouldn't find anybody who would fit that category. It didn't exist. Life is much more simple. It's the famous 50s. Life is much more simple. You know, people got married and they lived decent lives. It was before this nuclear revolution that goes on, which is unfortunately breaks up many marriages. And we have to, let's be honest, it hit the Orthodox community too. Shani Rach, we have to thank our many more safeguards. But when the world goes under, even the Torah community is influenced by it. And even the most Haredish, the most Hasidish who put themselves in the ghetto, unfortunately, you know, exceptions, and we think very highly of those who insulate themselves. But you know, it's not complete. It's not a perfect insulation. But in those days, the world itself wouldn't tolerate this stuff. Of course, it went on behind closed doors. Sin is as old as man, but it was done. You know, as they call it, in the closet. I'm talking about. Not the next guy that came out of the closet. I'm talking about the men and women who would sin would be in the closet. Well, Chas V'Shalom, everyone espoused morality and loyalty and fidelity and all these kind of things. And now, and also the Jews became much richer. Let's call it state of state. Jews became richer and their lifestyle became fancier, and this caused the breakdown of many families. Unfortunately, it's a sad thing. It's very sad, and we have to cry about it because it's sad more than most. You know, you become, you know, immune or inured to almost anything. Now in camp in Mor Hashah, so they put out a new application. I think some 5 or 10 years ago. And the new application, you don't have to apply to see the application, you can cry from the application. It says, you know, father's name and mother's name. They have a question, they have to straight. Are your parents divorced? What kind of questions they ask is that? The answer was they didn't know. They didn't have it on the form, and they would get killed. The camp was called. The father would call the mother. They have a big fight, and the camp officer didn't know, and they would get caught in such terrible things. That not much to point out to put it on the application. And it hurt me so terribly. And every time I get an application and said yes, you know, gewalt. Mostly write down no or no Baruch Hashem. You know. I remember once I was on the basketball court in Lake Como. It goes back 5 or 10 years also. Sitting and talking to a young fellow, I didn't know who he was. Nice boy. So I asked him, oh, where are you from? He was in one of the high school buckets, so I didn't know you. It wasn't on my list, where are you from? Where are you from? He says, oh, looks to me like a kid, 14, 15, 16, how old is he? Well, I'm from, how do you say, I'm from Teaneck and Englewood. That's what he's. So I'm looking at him, I saw the pain in his eye. I'm trying to start to cry. I couldn't handle it. Poor kid. Now, I just saw the latest thing in the mail. I got it from the U.S. News, which I subscribed to. There was a cover story. It was called Invincible Kids. The point is that kids can survive even the most traumatic of situations. They can survive divorced parents, and they can survive abusive parents and alcoholic parents. It's not to recommend you do anything, but kids can somehow. We thought that kids would be destroyed completely by these circumstances. Many of them are, but a goodly percentage, you know, much more than we would have imagined, survive. They're resilient. That's what we call resilient. They can somehow overcome almost anything. So this kid, I don't know where he is now, this young man, but it's a tragedy. So we have to do everything in our power to avoid the circumstances for ourselves. You can only be so smart, you know. There's a limit to how smart every person is. We have to learn from the lessons of the Parsha Shavua to see what exactly we should be looking for. Okay, so let's take a look. Eliezer is on a search, right? And again, the first thing he does, if you want to look at these things up, I'll tell you about Pesukim. The first thing he does in Pesuk Yudbei, Hashem. He first says praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's the first thing. Then he goes on, and what is he asking for? The first word out of his mouth, the absolute first word of the field is Hakre. Hey, Kuf, Reish, Hey. What's the shortest of the word Hakre? Mikre. What does a Mikre mean? Something that happened. It was Mikre often has the context of a very infrequent happening. Says the Kli Yoker. Yes, it's exactly what it means over here. Hakrein alafona hayom sheyazmelo Hashem nara chashuva shein darka losis klal ulefisho b'mikre teite yachsho lefonai zidavka. Why? Kidei shelo tia min hayat onio. The first thing. We know what's going to come next. We all, everyone knows, you ask anybody, what's the most important thing to look for? Chesed. Everyone says that. And they're right. So that's exactly what he's going to ask for. Right? I'll ask for food for drink for me. She'll go for drinks for the camel. That's chesed. It's correct. The most important thing to look for is chesed. But before you even get to chesed, the first word is hakre. From the mizah to mizah of news. I don't want a woman who hangs out by the well all the time. The well is a candy store, you know that. The well was the corner, you know. The well was the hangout place. If a girl is going to hang down by the well, I'm not interested in her. But how am I going to find her? It's an impossibility. How can I find her if I want to look by the well and I want to go never by the well? How can I find her? But you have to doubt for. Because the girl should make a mikra, should make a coincidence, a rare occurrence, that a woman who never goes out should just that day find herself by the well. And so therefore the accompanying midah, which even precedes chesed, is the midah of tzniut. That's why we live in such a difficult world for shidduchim. We live in a world which hates tzniut. The world as such hates tzniut. The world is all a world today of self-promotion. That's the world is self-promotion, resume, right? This is a new concept, resume. Whoever heard of 50s is nothing as resume. It just didn't exist. Today, everyone has a resume. I'm this great, and I'm that great, and I'm so wonderful, I'm so fantastic, I'm so terrific. prove it. My resume. It can't help. You have to get a job. Well, I mean, that's just a new thing. I don't know how. But the problem is now girls also get jobs, so they also have resumes. You know, 100 years ago, the girl had no resume and had no job and had no school and had no. It was very, very neoclassical life she used to lead. Now, every girl by the well. That's the problem. I mean, if you're by the well, then you can go to school, you go here, but you have to do it in a manner of sneers. I don't just mean sneers, how you dress. It's also very important. Some girls today, even in today's world, which is thank God, got much better, they still dress terribly with the clothes, which are either, quote, revealing, which is an Easter garment, or, and I'll say it, I'm saying it straight out, I don't want to be misunderstood, and I don't want to say things sometimes they can't be too subtle. They wear clothes that are too tight. Tight clothes are provocative. That's not sneakers. I don't care if it goes down to the wrist, if it goes down to the ankle, if it's too tight, or in some other way, it's provocative. Provocative, you know. It's hard to, there's different standards of what's provocative. There's a whole argument in various schools. Is a girl permitted to wear Levi's slit? It's a different story. That's a different issue. And they say slit there also, even though the top of the slit is blue to me, because it's provocative. I can't understand that one. I don't understand it. But if they say it in certain schools, I'm sure they must know what they're talking about. There's another issue which they have fought about. Is a girl permitted to wear Levi's tight? Tight is one thing which is terribly prohibited. Rabbi Yamin Zilber of Bnei Brak says if a woman's wearing tight, as if she's wearing nothing. And that's what he says. Whatever tight is like, it's not covered at all. That's a pretty strong statement. I think it maybe is somewhat of an exaggeration. But that's what he said. Printed it, the sir. But they have now the question, should a woman wear a sweatshirt, you know, which has writing on the sweatshirt? So the Gemara collects this in various schools. Some say it's mutter, some say it's usher. Because it should be a trend. It should be trying to be provocative or drawing attention. Whatever. But much more than clothes. Today, girls are pushy. Right? So they're pushy. I can't stand it. It's terrible neither. Yeah, it's terrible. I was at a wedding last week. Before I did this one recent wedding, last another one. And you know, when I was growing up, I mean, the girls dance for the kalav, nothing wrong with that. 100% Muslim. But when they, let's say for example, when the chasm kalav, when they came after the chuppah, and they went from the chuppah straight to the yichud, right? So the chasm kalav would go, and the boys would dance, so the men would dance, and the girls wouldn't dance. They would play that way. Got the rush dance then. Now new meister now. The kala and the chasm are going, so the boys are all dancing in front of the chasm kala, and the girls are hanging off to their life. They're like pushing, thronging right behind, and trying to get into the all the middle of the action. And I'm standing there. I'm trying to be. Are we in the season now? A blocker. Is that the right word to use? Football season. Run interference. And then even later on, when I have to dance, they push their way in. What's going on here? That's not the sneers that we're talking about. Sneers means much more than how a person dresses. It's a person, how a person conducts himself or herself. And sneers is especially important either when it comes to looking for a shidduch. Says the Kliyot, I'll prove it to you that it was a coincidence. Lakat nema v'torah v'ish lo yidah. It says in the pasuk later on, right? Vanara tovas mara ma'od v'sula v'ish lo yidah. So Rashi has this chat. Okay. He says, no. You don't know who she was. Shlo hoya shemoda makira kilo yosef me'olam kiva pamza v'alkein hutzvach lishol atzpia bat miyah. That's not polite. You should know this from here. If you see a young lady and she, wow, Marcel, annoying. She's just, you know, wow, very, very impressive. You'd like to get to meet her, which is very good. So, this is not polite. Hey, Bat Mia, who are you? What's your name? That's not the way to go. So what are you supposed to do? Loma lo shah, l'shar, nara, shayu shama. Right? There must be other girls there. Why? That's the way to, that's the more polite way to do it. He asks someone else, who is that? Kibali Safik Lahofa Lavada. Hello Fish Islo Yada Ratalamala Loikira Ratno Loikira. In other words, no one knew who she was. He asked, who's that? Never know who's, I don't know, stranger. She never came out. She was a Isha Sandua. So therefore, he had to ask somebody else, he had to ask her directly, about Sniyat. Zebek had no choice. So we see from here the critical importance of Sniyut. You know, in the olden days, a girl was never found outside. That's true. That's the Rav Rusha Gemara. The Gemara says in Brachos that a person should
rather walk behind a lion.
What? In your marriage. And it says it'll be called a Rama. Because times have changed. I agree. Times change in many different ways. But the principle remains the same. The principle is that a woman is supposed to conduct herself with sneers. It's the principle which is universal. So now it goes back to the Kliyoka or Parsha Chayesara. Now it goes back to Rashi in last week's Parsha. Ineba Oel. The Rashi says, Snuahi. So it goes back to the Bereshit. It's not just a Jewish concept, it's even a universal concept. This concept of sneers for a woman above the sneers for a man. A man should also be Snuah. Atnei Lecha Simon Lokepa applies to all men and women. But a woman has an extra meter of sneers is already found in Rashi in Parshas Bereshit. V'chiv Shua. What does V'chiv Shua mean? The Rashi quotes two pshatim from Chazal. One is that Pru Revu V'chiv Shua only applies to men because Darka Shal Ish Lichbosh is in great in Tzerek Aleph Pasuk Chav Ches. But that's the second shot. The first shot is Shalo Teheyat Anis, that a woman shouldn't be a, what do you call it, gadabout, is that the right word to use? Or a very forward or pushy or a woman who's exposed out to the, all the way outside. Chazal are critical of the Teite Dina Batleya Liros Rizal Torek. So Chazal say, it's not to blame the victim, the Chas V'Shalom, we don't want to go that far, yeah. Blame the victim. But the Chazal do say that if she would have stayed home, it wouldn't happen. The Ma'at of Shem, which of course is true. But they say, well, Leah also went out, Leah went out of Shem Mitzvah. The Kitzur, you have to be very careful in choosing a marriage partner. Stay away from Yas Onis. This doesn't mean that you have to find a woman who's living at home, who's not, never goes out of the house. That's not, in today's world you can't do that. Most likely, the girl you're going to marry, the time you marry her, the time you meet her, will be either a student in school somewhere, which is of course accepted. We don't keep the girls at home anymore, they go to school. Or maybe she's even older than that, she'd be at work. Right. Fine. But you have to measure her meters. Is she as honest or not? How does she talk to you? Some women, first of all, some kids can't stop talking. That's also b'chin of Yatan. It can't stop. That's not exactly right. That's not right. The Gemara Kiddushin talks about Tisha Kavan Tzicha. They want to be the kind of Gemara. They're machma. They're frum. They want to be the kind of Gemara. Kipshuta. But the Nashim Dabroni, the Gemara Brochus. But still, you know, there's a limit how much you talk and how you talk. You have to be very careful. You have to be so careful and. This means that sneers. Very, very important. Critical. Without means of sneers, it's bad news. Now we come to the main mitzvah, which is spoken of more explicitly in the in the parsha. That's the mitzvah of chesed. Right? Hakrei is supposed to give bays, and the supposed to give dalit tells the whole story. With the gemalim. What is she going to do? This young lady, she's going to give more than asked for. That's what's called gemilus chasodim, as she says. Ruya ilo shete gomelus chasodim kedai li likonis beveta shel Avram. That's why Avram Avinu asked Eliezer to go far away to choose a marriage partner from the family. Even though they were all devotees are, the Rosh Hashanah asks that question. What's the purpose? Avodah Zarah too. He said, but in Eretz Canaan there were midos mishpatos. There were terrible character traits. It's much more difficult to change a character trait than it is to change a theology. Theology can be learned and unlearned. But character traits which come from their earliest youth, it's very difficult to reshape and to remake. Very, almost impossible. As we saw, it's easy to finish shots than to change a mitzvah. That's what he said. And he should know. He was the Muslim movement. Hard to change a mitzvah. Difficult. So the people in the Eretz Canaan have terrible mitzvahs. And apparently those in faraway lands had somewhat better mitzvahs. Therefore, don't to go there. Out of town. That's not a joke. If you know what goes on in New York with the rat race, it has an impact. I'm not kidding. If you're from New York and you want a young lady who's a little bit less involved in the rat race, find a young lady who grew up out of town. I'm sorry to give that to Marshall. I didn't give it. Surely gave it. He's in Boston, and that's why. But it's true to it. New York is a much more rapid pace that was running and jumping. I was born and bred in the city, and then my father was born and bred in the city, so it's not as I'm putting my back at the Big Apple. But there is something to be said for that those who grew up out of town have a different, what we call ketzer, a different pace. And there's something to be said for that. See, Avichai Efron, who was a bum, he's an iron horror guy, iron horror, he's cheap. First, but it came down to he wants 400 shekel kesef, pounds of flesh. He wants to get for a burial plot. Talk about hiking up the funeral standards. I mean, there's a 400, unbelievable.
Knew there was a long time
to go shit. Okay, but still, he's overcharged. Still overcharged. Still overcharged. So here it says in the Kli Yakar that he wants to check out the Gemilas Chasadim. And he quotes an interesting Maimah Chazal in Masechet Tainus Chavdalet. Because you see, there's a phrase, which is a very important phrase. It's called the phrase of Ayin Ra. Ayin Ra, this context means a guy who's a cheapskate. He doesn't, can't give. That was Ephraim. Everything was iron raw. Couldn't give anything. Bilo, iron raw. How do they say that? That's a new common phrase. The world may have takers and givers. A taker is a bal iron raw. He wants only to take. Can't give. He can only take. That's the worst disaster for a man. The greatest bracha for a marriage is someone who can give. And if both are givers, the husband gives and the wife gives, it's a guarantee of a happy marriage. Don't think that I said it. Rav Dessler said it. Kuntru Zachetet, Mr. Meliyot. That's the key to a good marriage. They should both be givers. He should give to her, she should give to him. That's the key. So he wanted Rivka, the girl, should have to be a giver. That's why he wanted that she should have the meat of Gemilas Chasadim and give to the camels as well. But the Yoga quotes the Gemara, Kol Kala She'ineha Yofos, Kol Gufa and Sarah Fadika. What do you mean? She has blue eyes. Beautiful blue eyes. Don't check out. What is that? What's going on? No! She'ineha Yofos, she has an eye in Yofa. She's a giver. You know, the Gemara says a young boy in Elamathias. He gave her 40 years of Zion Yofa, and 60 years of Zion Ra. What kind of person is she? What's her attitude towards other individuals? If she's a giver, then it's someone who you don't have to check anymore. We live in a way of an age of check. Everyone's got to check Moshaduchim, check a million different things. His cousin is this, and his uncle is that, and her second cousin, and her skeleton in this closet, and that closet. And the Chazal say, that means that if she's a balas chesed and ayin yofa, she's a giving person, you don't have to check anymore. You don't have to check anymore. Don't check for the physical beauty, which is check erachem and v'layofi. What they want is a gemilas chasadim. It's called einei yofos. Einei yofos. Ayin yofa, as opposed to ayin ra, someone who's cheap. But you see, this ties to our first point as well, because the same phrase Ayin Raw, we learned Rav Asher 2 years ago, correct? On that Bay, the Gemara speaks here about, huh? Right? Ayin Hara. Not Ayin Raw, Ayin Hara. You must have heard your grandmother say, Bli Ayin Hara, Kenen Hara, Poop Poop Poo, other kinds of these kinds of things, you know, to ward off the evil eye. We think it's just bogus, it's just voodoo. But the Gemara, right? The Gemara has, you have to be careful if you have to put up a fence, you shouldn't see my corn grow, because you'll look at my corn, it'll stop growing. I mean, it's called Ayin Hara, Bli Ayin Hara, you keep saying. What's the connection between the Ayin Hara, which is the evil eye, if my success is flaunted, it's obvious to everybody, and the Ayin Hara of someone who is greedy, who can't give? What's the connection? The two phrases are being used. The answer is they're connected very much. Because you see, one Ayin Hara is someone who's stingy, can't give. Another Ayin Hara is someone who wants to flaunt whatever he or she has. Those are two sides of the same. You can't get to anybody else. You know why? Because you want to be above everybody else. You have to show how great you are. How great I am and how down you are. So I can't give you, and I have to show how great I am. That's what's called Ayin Hara. Ayin Hara. Two sides. And what are the opposites of these 2 meters respectively? The opposite of these 2 meters are opposite of Ayin Hara is Ayin Yafa, which means Chesed. And the opposite of Ayin Hara is Bli Ayin Hara, which means Tznius. So these midas of Chesed and Tznius are related to each other. Which is an accident. I did the 2 meters that the Priyanka explained that Eliezer is looking for. Because they're related to each other. The midas you have to look for, since I'm giving you Musana, which we have to look for. You have to look for these twin midas of Chesed and Tznius. That's what it's all about. Don't be swayed by resumes. Some of us call you up with an idea for us to meet a young lady. Oh, she's this, and she's this, and she's this, and she's this, and she's this. And these resumes can be sometimes very harmful. Harmful, such a harmful. You look for these meters of chesed and of sneers. Look, in today's world, a person can fulfill chesed and sneers in a way that they were unimaginable before, because we'd have such more advanced education. What's their career track? Is it a career track of chesed and sneers? It could be many things. It could be a doctor. It was a doctor doing all day long, was doing chesed. All day long, a doctor was doing chesed. That's his whole job, or her whole job. Now, it's what to worry about. If you're a young lady going to medical school, so it's not so simple to raise a family. Let's be blunt. If a woman's going to be in medical school, she has so many pressures in her whole life, it's not so easy for her to have a family, to have children. And we speak about children in plural, as it should be, and Vistiyata Vishmaya. We believe in having as much as possible, as much as the woman can handle, many children. That is to be the determining factor. How long? First of all, we'll have to give you the broch in the first place. Speak about, I got a call from California 3 days ago. Someone was in my shul, and it was such a terrible story. They couldn't have any children. They tried. They went here. They went to Belgium. And they went, we did all these things. They went all over the world. Get up. They adopted a baby. Baruch Hashem. But, when a couple gets married, and they, right away, they want a son, they want a birth control. And I said, what are you, crazy? You know what's going on in the world out there, with the people they are who never would give their right hand for to have a child. And you're playing with these contraception when your marriage begins. Hope and prayer that struggle should give you a brother. That should give you a brother without taking your neshama out for 5 or 10 years. After a couple is left with a child, and then the woman finds she can't handle it. She can't have another child right away. She's weak. She doesn't have the physical or the emotional strength. And then she wants what we call, quote unquote, space children. I'm a very big liberal. A big liberal, I think the woman has to be a baby machine. She has to come back to her strength. But to start like that, it's like starting on the left foot, it's terrible. I'm such a firm opponent of this practice. People have come to me and have cried to me and haven't budged. I tell the Chosin Kala, they come to me when I'm deciding to have a meeting with the Chosin Kala. I tell them this story because if the people ask me to tell the story. Happened 10, 15 years ago. A couple came to me. I don't really know them that well. I knew him from the basketball court of Orasha. A lot of people you meet there. He wasn't even, I think, in the college. Okay, but he's a very nice fellow. He's related to someone who I was in Tzaddik position for. And he came to me and he said, I want to come to speak to my college. He was in medical school. And his Carla was afraid she'd be lonesome if they'd have children. She'd be with a child all by herself. She wanted to postpone having children. She'd be afraid she couldn't handle it. It was a lot of loneliness. She'd be like, if you ask me, you got a child, you're not lonely. There's someone else there. All right. But anyway, that was her hang up. So I listened politely and I said, I'm sorry, but this is not the way, it's not the Jewish way to get married. You should try to have children. I kind of spoke, she blessed you with children. I saw those tears welling up in her eyes. But she controlled herself while she was in my room. Good. Wished them well. They got married. I had nothing to do with it. I lost track of it completely. I mean, I didn't know what I did. 10 years later. I called up for it. 10 years later. 10 years later. I'm at a dinner, a wedding. Somewhere. And it wasn't Yerushalayim. It was in the New York area. And this couple comes over to me. Shabbalevich, you remember me? Yeah, sure. How are you? We want to speak to you privately. They come and they said, we come and tell me the following. We want to tell you, remember we came to you before we were married? Yes, I remember. Remember it was a difficult session, I remember. I can tell you, he says, the man is speaking. We got to the car, my wife burst out in uncontrollable tears. Couldn't control it, just crying her head off. Couldn't handle it, she was so. But the acceptance of stock, the column of stock, whatever it was. We want to thank you. We can never express enough our courage at home. They pull out a picture with four of our children. And we now realize that what you said was such a smart thing. We were speaking, we had our own limitations, we didn't know what was going on, we were just nervous, whatever it was. We now realize if Chas v'Shalom had known we wanted, we wouldn't have had this tremendous bracha. And we're asking you, please tell our story. Tell our story. Please tell our story. So everybody who comes to you with such a problem, tell it. Don't forget the story of this couple. Tell the story. So I tell the story of the couple that comes to speak to me. I often have resistance. Because there are girls today who are interested in their own careers, and they say, if I become pregnant, I won't be able to pursue the career, and this and that. So you have to be careful. A woman's in a career track. You have to, in my opinion, I'm saying the first base, but you have to explain in a nice way, that's where you come from, that Chayev Adam Lisa Isha Kedei Lifos V'Lirmos, opening on the Shulchan Aruch, Kevin Ezra, you're Isha Aloha. Now, does this exclude all medical students? No. There are exceptions. I mean, there are women who are mamish, I don't know how to say it, super mom, they do everything. They have a medical school and they have children and it's still employed. I don't know how they do it. I don't understand how they do it. Don't understand it. I don't understand. Well, some of my shul is small. We were blessed in our community when someone from the shul got married to a doctor. Fine. I was even in the Sadiq Kiddush. I must have given them the same speech. I know I gave them the same speech. I don't understand it. I don't understand it. The couple of the Baruch Hashem is blessed in, in 5 years of marriage. 5 years, and I know exactly when they got married. I was in a Baylor Center, and we went to marriage. 5 years. Within 5 years of marriage, and only did this young lady complete medical school and internship, but she was also blessed at the same time with four children. I don't understand it. I'm just in awe. I'm in awe. Everyone knows that I'm in awe of this couple. That's not a secret. But Baruch Hashem, an overachiever. I know they have these tremendous kaiyas. There are others who've done similar things. But it's an exception. If you find this young lady you want to marry and she's in medical school, you better have confidence in her ability to be able to do two things at once. Not so fast. Huh?
Why should
they come?
Just wait
until
you're married? No, after they get married, it's would be a lot of pressure on the girl. If they have a child, so it's like 2 weeks after.
I'm giving you my own opinion. I'm a vehement, fierce, unequivocal opponent of couples starting off the other day, married out of birth control. For many reasons. One is that it's against Hashkafas HaTorah. Hashkafas HaTorah is clear, Lippos V'Lirvos. And Shiyui Mitzvah Mashinan, Mitzvah Boliot Tal Tach Mitzena. You don't postpone mitzvahs. Two, on a practical level, there's so many cases in which a couple come to me later and say, oi, we have problems with fertility, and then some of them say, build up antibodies to each other, and all kinds of stories. You don't take a chance. It's such an important part of marriage. You don't take a chance on it. I'm not saying you have to have four kids in 5 years. We're not medical school. I'm not saying that. They do what they do. They don't. I thought I'm a liberal as far as faith and children, but not at the beginning. When the couple gets married, they have to be the spouse that got a stroke. She gives them the bracha. It should be privileged to have a child, not to try to do all kinds of things, tricks not to have children. That's my view. Yes.
Financially,
so Rav Avadia has a tshuva, in which he writes, quote the Gemara, "Mandi yov kai yov mizoni. Whoever provides life provides bread." Let me add my version of what he said. You can never afford children. It's a fact. You can never afford children. They have the how much it costs to raise a child when it's 21, have these things. You know what? Millions and billions of dollars. That's without yeshiva tuition. You can never afford children. My opinion, again, I know people criticize me for this, but I'm saying it anyway. My opinion is that finances have nothing to do, should never be a deterrent to having children. I know it's a strong statement. That's my opinion. The one deterrent which I accept as legitimate is reason for limiting or spacing having children. That's where it begins and it ends. And I've had cases on both sides. I'm always on the woman's side. I'm known as a ladies' man, with respect. I often have Kavidim coming to me, and they have a fight. He wants a child, she doesn't. She wants a child, he doesn't. It happens both ways. I think it's in every single case I've passed like a woman. Whatever she wants. If she wants a child, she says, I can't afford it. Too bad. And if he wants a child, she says, but I can't handle it. Said him again, too bad. She's the one who's bearing the child. She's the one who bears the brunt, no matter what kind of career woman she is. There's no house, after everything's said and done. That's where it begins and ends. So therefore I think it's her prerogative. Again, she shouldn't be flippant about it. I had one child that I don't want to have any more, period. But there are cases in which a woman had deep-seated psychological fears. It wasn't a joke. And I told her that's how she feels about it. She shouldn't have another child, but she feels better. I was very happy. Recently I had a case. There were years, quite a few years, I didn't have a child. And I understood she really it was deep-seated. I spoke to them. Now, Baruch Hashem, they're expecting another child. I'm very happy. She's able to overcome the deep problems that she has. But that's an exception. Most times, it's just a matter of, it's difficult, it's hard to have children. No, I'm not saying it's not hard to have children. It's difficult. They place a great strain on a marriage, and a strain on life, and a strain on your pocketbook, and all kinds of strains. Nevertheless, we have to understand that having children, bringing them up in the proper Torah way, is the ultimate mitzvah l'shem shemayim. A person should want to bring children into the world. That should be a continuation of the Mitzvah, of the Torah. That's what the first line of Shulchan Aruch, they live for the liberals. That's the way it should be, to try as best as you can to continue the Mitzvah. And Purim is not just have children and just let them be absentee, to make sure they grow up and they learn in yeshivas and they learn in, and then they become observant Jews and Jewesses, and they carry on to the next generation. That's the victory. And it's, I think Rabbi Lamb wrote in one of his early articles, this goes back, I think, in the maybe 30 or 40, a long time ago, when the world was the ZPG. I don't know what that means anymore. Remember what the ZPG stands for? Correct. Zero population growth. This is the old, the first beginnings of the environmentalists, ZPG. Rabbi Lamb wrote an article, what's by ZPG? We don't believe in ZPG. We never just believe in ZPG. And now, what he called the post-Holocaust era, we are vital to believe in ZPG. We're trying to make us into Z, not just ZPG, zero. They're trying to destroy us completely, the Nazis in Mashemot. And he wrote the Fair Charade. He wasn't afraid to write it. But in the post-Holocaust era, we should try the best we can to replenish Now, no one could have 6 million children. You know, but look, we were destroyed. Come on, we were destroyed. And I would venture by looking around the room that most of the members of your extended family who were destroyed, speaking for myself, I did. My mother had a brother and two sisters who were married, children, I don't know exactly how many children, were killed by the Nazis in Auschwitz. So, I mean, that them and how we see Rashi, called the Me'achicha, the Me'alashanam, them and their potential children and children's children were all wiped out. And let's be a little bit more candid. How many Jews are there who were born Jews but who intermarried? And if they're men, then the children intermarried with women who are not Jewish, their children are lost to Yiddishkeit. And how many Jews are there out there that even if they're Jewish and marrying Jewish, but they're not living Jewish? You know, we have a responsibility. Again, I'm not telling you to have 20 kids. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that at least in theory and abstract, we should say that having a large family is something which is good. Not to be looked down upon. You know, they look down. I can say when I used to walk the street with all my little kids, this goes back 15 years ago, whatever it was. My wife was walking the street with a bunch of kids in tow on the avenue in Riverdale. It was derision. Derision. And it wasn't easy. I mean, at that point in time, there was there was no one else in the community like that. It was like, look, go ahead. This is not Borough Park. Now, Borough Park, you understand that there's a Muncie. All right, but this is Riverdale. How can you do this to us here in the community? So, we felt there was a responsibility and a mitzvah. And I'll tell you, after everything else, that, you know, children are difficult to bring up, no question about it. But a person nevertheless feels that if the children turn out right, you have to be misfollowed, I call it Baruch Hu, but they turn out right, that the person is really he's done right by Kodesh Baruch. He's done what the Kodesh Baruch was there. Kodesh Baruch wanted there should be good Jews in the world, and he helped. The same way, there are other ways of helping. The person is a Rebbe and a Yeshiva. He has an impact on some even. So you can have no children. That's tremendous. Hashpah and Klal. Look at the Chazon Ish, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, the Tzatzma Rebbe. They didn't have children. And they had, between collectively, between the three of them, about incredible Hashpah on so many tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of Jews. And if a fool, they're a fool. But we have to try, and everyone in its own ability to do these things. So let's go back now to our discussion of these two things, the Tzniut and the Chesed, which we're discussing. Rashi comments that what did Eliezer take? He took Nezem Zav Beka Mishkolo, which Nei Tzmida Mayodea Sarah Zav Mishkolo. So Rashi comments is all remez. What's the remez for? Shikle Yisrael and Shnei Lukot and Aseret Adib. What's it does? So the Kliyokas, again, a very interesting insight to explain what these things stand for. What does it mean? This is follows. We know that the Shkolim, Shikle Yisrael, was to counter Ayin Hara. We know that. You know, today we don't become a Shia Tanefa. Why does this count straight? Because you're afraid of Ayin Hara. As a matter of fact, in Sefer Shmuel, where they count as straight, and it was a Magefa. So therefore we see that the Shikle Yisrael is the remnant to the Tzniyus. That's exactly what we called before the Ein Neho Yopo. Right? The Ayin Yopo as opposed to the Ayin Hara. And therefore he goes further and explains. The Shnei Lukos and the Atzeres HaDibra. Same thing. You see, the Lukos are given twice. They were given first time for Kole Kolos or Bechuos. Tremendous fanfare, publicity. It was a media event. The whole world stopped. Says Rashi in Parshas Ki Tisa, on the passage of Ale Eli Ha'ara for the second book. Harishonos were given the kolos of the Shuas. Shalta ben Ayin Hara. Ayin Hara took hold of it. And therefore they were smashed. Concludes Rashi, Ein Lecha Yopa Minas. A private giving of the Torah. And therefore, the same remit of Shnei Luchos and Aseret HaDibros is to the Midah of Tznius. So they asked, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu give the Luchos the first time with such publicity? The answer is he had no alternative. As the Rambam and the Kuzari write, our whole Amunah is based on the revelation of the Sinai. That's how we know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu exists. And that the Torah is true. How do we know? We only know from the Mamre HaSina. So there's no alternative but to go public. That happens also often in Jewish life. We keep talking about the importance of Tznius. There are times there's no alternative but to do something in a public way. I'm giving a shiur now. It's a public shiur, right? It's more than a minyan. It's a public shiur. So what are we doing it for? The answer is for our books in the Torah. You have to be so careful. There's a Gemara in Moed Katan. Muhammad Cotton says that teaching Torah in the streets is not necessarily a good thing. Chamuke Yerechayim, the Gemara says there, Muhammad Cotton, indicates that Mayerach Baseiter, Abdivrei Torah Baseiter. So the Torah should be kept somewhat under wraps. Ay, Shnei Tzfotis, Chokma Tzachut Torona, that indicates that the Chokma should be out, you know, all out in the street. No, what is it from Shas? That's the first one that talks to the So you have to be careful, even in Torah, not to get too public. It could be harmful. We believe very strongly in the Midah of Tznius, and therefore, when a person is looking for a marriage partner, that is the most important Midah. Tznius, accompanied by Chesed. But I say in today's world, both suffer. Even Chesed suffers. You know why? People don't need Chesed anymore so much. I remember when I was growing up, again, take it back to the old years, no one had anything. People, there was, you know, we might call the post-war years, I remember the 50s, I was living in Brooklyn at the time, and, you know, the families with the young children, and no one had anything. So everyone, you know, one for one, helped everybody else out. You know, and one couple babysat for the other couple, and when they had to go away, and they gave them this, and they gave them that. Everyone was friendly to everybody else. You know, what we call kep up kep, you know, you had on right next to each other in an apartment house. Everything's, you know. Now, what happens is people got richer, they came and had much more money, and they think they're independent. People have maids inside their homes who take care of all their needs, which is a problem of its own right. Or they can afford to get all kinds of outside help, and therefore, there are more barriers between one family and another. There's less pulling for one another because people have less need. It's wonderful. People have less need. It's great. But it dulls the sense of chesed. People have no need, so that people don't have to provide for other individuals. And this sometimes causes a dulling of the sense of chesed. But even more than the sense of chesed, which has been dulled, the sense of sneer has been dulled even more. Because in the outside world, chesed is still looked upon as something good. You don't do it so much, but it's considered a very something which is very noble and admirable. With tzniyas b'chlal family, we are in a world of self promotion. So these are the most important attributes that a person has to look for in finding a marriage partner. I have to be honest with you. Someone asked me, a girl asked me, so what do I look for? And I gave this whole drush. So you know what I answered them? Same thing. Chesed and tzniyas. But it's only for women only. This is the first mental, chesed for sure, and tznius as well in a different way. Okay, but tznius is something which is important for men also. They shouldn't be pushing themselves and brag about their accomplishments. You have to send a resume to get a job. Okay, so then you have to find out, you have to count up all your achievements. But it's not. It shouldn't become part of your personality. That's the rat race of the New York. Pushing, you know, getting ahead. It shouldn't. You should somehow try to keep your core personality separate and apart from any side Sims resume you have to write or grad school application. You should try to keep it separate in your mind. Not so easy. You have to try your best to do it. Very important. The chesed of women is different than the chesed of men. I'm not saying there isn't. That's because the Chazal, as a matter of fact, that's what enables the Mashiach to exist. I'm not kidding. So it says in the Pesuk of Sefer Devarim that the person is not permitted to marry an Ammoni or Moabi. Why? Al-Dvar shalot kibnu atem v'lechem uv'mayim. Right? So they didn't come with, to give you bread and water. So the Gemara says, Yevamis, that's why you're allowed to marry Ammonis and Moabis. Because ein darka shalisha l'kadeh. It wasn't the way of the women to go out to the desert to bring lechem and mayim for wayfarers. So therefore you couldn't have a taina, quote, against the Benos Moab and the Benos Ammon, because they weren't doing it, their inaction was not considered deplorable. The men's inaction was considered deplorable. Today we live in a different world. The women now fakir. There's so much they're doing, many ma'aseh chesed, and they're going and driving in their cars. In our society, women drive cars. There are those societies which they don't. I'm not kidding. You just go to, if I'm not mistaken, if you go to the business community in Muncie, not far away, the women are not allowed to drive. Can't drive. Now, if the city has honest, it's going out, you'll be driven. I didn't take the cab with these crazy men drivers at the Sarachim. But they don't let them drive. They don't let them drive in that community. So we make fun a little bit. We shouldn't make so much fun. They have their gedara, and if it works for them, it works for them. And I'm not telling you that married girls can't drive. That's not, I don't think it's good advice. It's in, you know, the society in which we live. But the women who drive today, they can do so much chesed with the car, bringing people to big things. There's so much chesed to be done in the world. That has, unfortunately, just to make a side comment, been a victim of the women's careers. Aside from some of the other negatives, positive too. Some of the other negatives of women's careers, which has come up to a problem today, is that there's very few chesed groups. Who's doing the chesed group? Satna. You go to a hospital somewhere, up and down the city, up and down. They come from Williamsburg every day, they go up to all the hospitals. They go, they start Beth Israel, you know the geography, Beth Israel, then they go to NYU, then they go to the New York hospital, then they go to Mount Sinai, and then they go to Columbia. Those are the big five, those are probably the biggest five in Manhattan, I guess. Up, you know, they go right up the high, up the east side, they go to, and they give you hot chicken soup. I'm not Satma. Doesn't matter. They'll give you anyone they know is Jewish from, not nobody. Chesed, that's all. No boundaries. Why aren't all of them doing it? Because they're busy working. Halavai? Halavai should pay for the chicken soup. Halavai? Do we do enough to support the big column of Satma? I don't think so. How do we even do that? But you know, the woman who was going to be a homemaker, that's the modern word they use, she's going to stay at home with her children and look down upon in society today. So you have to know, and what do? So it says, do you work? So, different answer. Yes. Where do you work? I work at home. I think you are. That's a computer mode. Work at home, you know. I'm a multi-millionaire and play the stock market from home. Yeah, I work at home with my children. See, we have it all. It's all wrong, you know. They say, "Oh, this woman, all she does, she cooks and she serves the food." There's no glamour in it. I once read a book which was describing the glamour which America attaches to its airline stewardesses. What do? They give out food. That's all. So why is the woman who gives out food to her own children every day less glamorous in the eyes of American culture? I'm not saying how good she looks. I said she looks better. The answer is the stewardess gets paid more. It's paid more. Yeah. So it's considered to be something which is paid for it. You do it for nothing, it's just looked down upon in America. And the Torah is Pakeret. Someone's doing it to Lashem Shamayim, not Lashem Skar, of a solid sense. It's on a high madrigal. It's on a high madrigal. And if whatever you can do to follow your soul in this way, it should be looked up. We should look up to it, not look down upon it. That's what it applies to men as well. There's some men who, you know, have the ability to become very wealthy individuals, They could be wealthy lawyers or doctors, and they choose to go into less lucrative professions. Some even take the extreme and want to become a rav or a rebbe in a yeshiva. Quite a far, quite a way off from being a lawyer or a doctor or some other kind of a secular field. Big difference. Big difference. So many places just look down upon. Never. The person makes a conscious decision, and it's a decision which is made taking the Shem Shemayim, and it's taking the Shem Shemayim, it's something we should look up to a such individual. Not the kind of a person who never had nothing else to do, so he became a Rebbe or a Rav, couldn't compete in any other field. That's not the Rabbanim we're looking for. We're talking about people who could have gotten your life high marks, and they could have stayed and done well, but they were the LSATs and the MCATs and the MBATs and the, no, 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 no. the G something around. GRE, no, some other thing.
GMAT.
Whatever, all the ACTs, yeah. MATs, BATs, CATs. And they could have done, the Rebbeim aren't stupid. They also have a good cup. And they could do well. But they decided they wanted a higher calling. Right? So, we look down upon them? No. We should look up. But they're mostly nefesh. The kitzur, when a person approaches marriage, you'll find that it's a lot of self-definition as well. You can sort of meander along without, don't think about too many things. When a person's going out, so you begin to think, hey, what am I? What is she? What am I? Right? And first of all, she'll ask you, who are you? It's amazing. They may ask you many questions. They may never thought. I never thought about this before. What do you think about this? I never thought about it before. There was no need to think about it before. You just went along and married away. All of a sudden, now it's crunch time. And what do you think about this and this? And now you got to conduct yourself in this fashion and this. We believe that this process, which is described in the parasha, is a difficult one. And let's be candid. The parasha is talking about a, what do you call it? An arranged shidduch. No? An arranged shidduch. Rivka's nowhere to be seen. Rivka's back in Eretz Yisrael. Yitzchak is in Eretz Yisrael. Rivka is in Aram Narayim. They don't even see each other. And the shidduch is finalized. Now, I'm not advocating that you should do this against the Gemara. I'm Shirena. What I am advocating is that I think you'd be well served in this process by thinking very carefully about who you want to go out with. So don't go out with anybody. And worst comes to worst, so it won't work out. I don't believe in that. Because there's something worse than that. Worst comes to worst, you won't, so you'll go out once and drop it, and you'll mutually leave each other out, and that's fine. Right? Not so good. It's a waste of time, but not so terrible. Worse than that could be, you go out for a long time, and then you find something which is terribly wrong with the other party. Worse is that you go and you marry her, and it's a disaster. And why'd you marry her? Well, she's very pretty. You're only boss of a dog. I mean, I don't attribute to you any angelic qualities, and therefore a person can be attracted by good looks, or some by money. I think Gemara says in Kiddushin that a person should not marry the Shem Mammon. I think Gemara says in Mefurish in Kiddushin that one who marries the Shem Mammon, Chas V'Shalom, can have bonim she'enim hagunim, can have children who are not proper children. The Ramah, Simon Bey says it's only if it's kind of chash psul. But the Vilna Gaon says, not that way. No, you marry for money, so you can end up having children who are not proper. So a person shouldn't marry for money. What do you do if a girl has money? Well, she has to get married. But stay tuned with those. She can marry someone who has money of his own. As often happens. Or if the man does not have so much money, so you have to, hope he's marrying with Shem Shammai. But once a wag who was kibitzing many years ago said, this girl, you can't marry him for love. Well, how can you not love a girl with so much money? Yeah. That was a joke which the yeshiva man once made, but it's a very serious. Every joke has a covers a lot of truth to it. So be careful with these things, and so you should try to be careful in terms of who you're going out with. Now, if a person has parental advice, all right. It's al ken yazam ish. Other than you know, definitely gets married. Before he gets married, parental advice is certainly appropriate. Very good question. The problem is that today's world, they give you a resume. She went to this school, you know, she went to this high school, and she went to this seminary, and she went to this Stern, and she's in this school. That doesn't tell you anything about that's external. I mean, it tells you something, but it's external. You don't tell you, who is she? To try to find someone who knows her, who can tell you that she is a Baal of Kesed and a Baal of Shtzius. It's not easy to find out, I agree. To try to find it out. Maybe your parents can do research and find it out because they're in a better position. Lashon Hara? It's not Lashon Hara. If you're asking about it, I get calls all the time. Present company included. I get called all the time about how people come in with the yeshiva, this and this one and this one, the other one. I tell the truth. It's dangerous. If you want, you better show me the shiur. I tell the truth. It's not everyone. He's great. He's a London muflug, and he's shiur every day at 9 o'clock. He comes on time, and he's an ilui, and he's an incident. I don't. That's not strap. I mean, you get the unvarnished. Well. Sometimes somewhat varnished, but usually unvarnished truth. That's the way it is. So I'm not really doing anyone a service by telling them about a boy what he isn't. I often get calls from ladies and brothers who are calling me to thank you for your frank opinion, because if someone else just covered the whole thing up, the things have to be covered. I'm often put in a very difficult position. But I know certain things about somebody. Which I don't want to. I don't want to reveal it first. Health problems, to reveal every health problem the first before the first day, so they'll never go out. So I'm. They often say. So they usually just ask me, and they ask the worst question: is there anything else that I should, that you know about that I would want to know? And that's the fishing expedition. So my response is usually pretty evasive in that kind of a case.
Is it
to
not say anything at first about
a
health situation?
Is that
the
time of looking at it? I don't think so. I think that the Gemara Yevamot is the following case. That's just health. This is this case in Gemara Yevamot. A man was the son of a goy. He was Jewish, the father of the goy. No one to marry him. No one ever mechut. There was a goy, right? So they didn't want. So the Rav Ashi told him, "Zil itma, go far away, hide yourself, and get married there." In fact, the disciple, God, it's Gnevas Das, Mekatzos. What's going on over here? He said, "How can you do such a thing?" He gives a very interesting and important answer. He says that when it comes to a chefta, an object, you have no right to hide even the smallest, move. For example, I have a car. It's a Cadillac. Used car. I want to tell you a used car. I know there's a scratch in the bottom. After the full disclosure, I'll tell you the scratch. Why? Simple reason to decide. Because otherwise, the guy could buy a different Cadillac, the same exact car, without a scratch. So you have no right to fool him and tell him the one with the scratch. When it comes to Shidduchim, says the disciple, in the Sefer Perish in Kilos Yaakov and Yevamos, it's not true. This person has a certain shortcoming. Diabetes. Another example. It's diabetes. I mean, no one wants to have diabetes. It's, and even if you look on the books, there's a somewhat short life expectancy. I mean, at least statistically. So, no problem. Marry the exact same boy without diabetes. Doesn't exist. So therefore, the same disclosure, full disclosure is not required. According to the side, you don't have to reveal it even ever. You can marry it without telling him. I have AIDS. No. says that the rule of thumb is any pagam, which is so serious, that if the woman married the man, or the other way around, and it would find out subsequently that he wanted a divorce, anything so serious, you're required to review it, otherwise not. That's a tough call. Hey, he'd want to get divorced right away, even if he found out about it, that's for sure. Okay? That's for sure. But short of that, not so simple. Not so simple whatsoever. If you marry someone and you finally had diabetes, she had diabetes. Tay-Sachs is a different story. Tay-Sachs is only a problem if both parties have Tay-Sachs. That's a disaster. There's a thing called Dor Yisharim. Dor Yisharim, I advocated very strongly Dor Yisharim. You know what Dor Yisharim is? And I would do it in advance. That's what the Chassidus Shul had the one up. They made up. Before they even go out, they do the Dor Yisharim. So, you know, people come to me, you know, they go out 5, 6, 8 times, can I do Dor Yisharim? You know, in the case where they do the Dor Yisharim, and then blood spills to north. The shit doesn't work out. It's tough, okay. I'll be honest with what I do. When I got married, with no Dor Yisharim, and it was testing, it was really almost unheard of. And, but see, out of the Shema, I thought his brother was blessed with healthy children. But you never know. You can have many other children still. Because you could have at least one carrier of Pesach. Maybe even two if you just get the lucky draw. So after all our children were born, my wife and I were tested for Pesach. You know, we had to go anywhere to get tested for cholesterol, you know, the mid-age disaster. So you got to get the annual checkup. They said, 1 year, we said, let's test. The both of them are both negative. So we're both negative, right? So I told my children, there's one thing I don't have to worry about. Not just to worry about, this thing I don't have to worry about. But maybe your parents were tested, yes? I don't know.
What if the person
Very serious problem. But do you know you can't have children? For Moshe has a tshuva, which he prints, that a woman has no period. No. No cycle, no needles. Now, you know, if you have no needles, I mean, if you have me, you know, you can't have children, you have no needles. It's impossible. The whole system's not working. So Moshe was asked, must she tell her husband, her cousin? Moshe said, no. So that pills, no. Can you imagine that? Not to tell? I don't know, I would be a little bit afraid to the emotion. There was a case in which a Talmud of mine was engaged to a young lady. This young lady died, her father died at a fairly young age. A certain syndrome, medical syndrome. And when the young lady became of age to get married, so her mother, the almana, went to the Rav with her rabbi, went to Fuda Boston to speak to the Rav, asked, is she required to reveal to a young man this is such medical syndrome? What's wrong? Well, the father died young from a heart attack, and it can happen that there could be, there's a somewhat short, statistically short marriage expectancy. But you know, you can live to 120 also. Yeah. The Rav says, no, you don't have to tell him. So the couples got engaged, and the woman couldn't sleep at night. The mother couldn't sleep at night. She said, I'm taking this to a fine young man. I know my daughter has a certain thing, and I can't do it. So she told him. So he went crazy. He went to the biggest experts in the country, I think it was in Baltimore. I think he went all the way out to Baltimore, went to the doctors there, and he came up and said, Rebbe, what should I do? He asked me, what should he do? I said, this decision I cannot make for you. And then I'll see you You have to make it on your own. To make it on your own. He broke the engagement. I got a call from the mother who somehow thought that maybe I was the one who told to break the engagement. Maybe she thought I approved. I did. I told my son she had to make a decision and say, you know, how to break it. And she's crying and yelling. I remember this thing that I went to their house to speak to this mother and the daughter who I didn't even never met before. Because I felt that, you know, they had to just speak to them. And they were crying, and they were just, how can they just do this to us? No. She got married, he got married, she has children, he has children, and everyone, I hope they'll live happily ever after. But you can't blame this fellow, he just couldn't handle it. Other people don't handle different things. You know, it's always one person's movement is different movement, different things. Everyone has, no one is perfect. Anybody have anything, no one is perfect. Everyone has something wrong with him or her. I'm not shy of it. Be perfect. It hasn't been created. It doesn't exist. question is, you know, what's critical and what's not so critical. The decision that everybody has to make for himself and herself. But the yisodas are critical. And therefore, if your parents can do something in terms of research, quote unquote, that's very advisable. Friends, now that they're around here, everyone says friends. The friends are this. Good. Who are the friends of? Are the friends there? What's their, are they B'nai Torah or B'nos Torah? They have to, number one, be have the right outlook, know what to look for. They have to be smart. So they can say, oh yeah, we heard. Yes, but Bechesed, but Tznias, this woman, this girl, boy has it. They have no clue. They can't be passed the note. So even if they have a good heart to look for the right things, they just an eye on them below you. If you want to take their advice, be very careful. Very careful. And a person has to know when is he ready to get married. I would say it straight, and I'm probably going to say it again. I know it's an unpopular stance. If you're not ready to get married, don't go out. Modern statement. Go out, go out, have fun. You know what? And maybe you'll meet her and you'll get married 5 years later. Schlep it out for 5 years. Mamish Gehenim. Gehenim. Because the person is above the dumb. The Kodesh Baruch Hu built us with certain Yetaharas, without which the world couldn't survive. As the Gemara tells us in the Sefer Sanhedrin, the world couldn't survive without the Yetaharas. And to put yourself into a Nisayon, it's also crazy. That's why I have a favor of short, fairly short, we discussed it before, fairly short courtships and fairly short engagements. What you need is problems. So when you're ready to get married, to dominate a very long Shmoneh Esrei, and a lot of states say many problems to him, and then find someone who we could recommend it highly by someone who you really trust. You trust they have a Torah point of view, and you trust they have a common sense. And maybe someone in your family, a family member, or particularly astute, a friend, or even a Rebbe, or someone who knows. And then Kodesh Baruch Hu should give you a bracha. And the bracha should be that you should find the right one. Same with the Eliezer bracha was answered, Tefillah was answered, so yours should be answered. And let's not forget the famous Shabbat, which many have, the short engagement is found in the parsha, right? Hey, Shiva, now I'm on the Yom also. Yeah, a year, 10 months. There's nothing doing. Once the Shiva is done, let's go quick. As soon as possible. Of course, the Kala has to agree. But they shall not fear. You can't, you don't want to marry someone who's done pushing to a by her parents. It's also terrible. But what's remarkable is how the parsha ends. It talks about the Shiva. It says, Yeah, Yitzchak Olala, Sora Imo, Vayikach Es Rivka Vatilol Yishav Vayel Vero. So you see that she was a wonderful woman, and the beauty of the home came in with the Yadoluk and the Bracha B'Isa and Anan Kosher, all these things that Sora has, the Rivka reintroduced to the tent. But what the Mefarshim point out is that Vayel Vero came afterwards. That's the idea of loving a wife in the fullest sense. Comes after marriage. I don't just mean, of course, physically, it's just some puzzle. But even emotionally, you learn to live with someone over so many years, you begin to have this very powerful attachment, not just physically, but emotionally. Can't happen during courtship. It can't. It's a limit. But it can't. America is unfortunately influenced by Hollywood. Have to fall madly in love. I want to have bells ringing, I don't know what other kind of release they have. Bells ringing, and I don't know what other kind of crazy story there is. I don't feel the bells ringing, I don't feel madly in love, so I can't get married. That's false. If you can't feel the attachment emotionally, you can't get married. And if you're in doubt, don't get married. You can't get married, you're suffering. Suffering. You can't imagine so you are sure. Of course, sure. No one is 100% sure. But sure beyond a reasonable doubt. Even then, we don't object to this. Jury, okay, Nachanam? Sure beyond a reasonable doubt. To convict yourself to a life of marriage. You have to be sure. Beyond a reasonable doubt. I'm not just really. I mean, it's a very serious issue. And sometimes there are cases where they say, I'm not sure, I don't know, but I advocate. Well, then don't see her for 2 weeks. And see how you feel. If you feel nothing, then maybe it's not for you. You know, on paper it's good. If you feel that attachment, that means that it's something really been established a strong link. These are all general guidelines. I do feel, just to end with this, that when searching for a marriage partner, we try to find someone who's compatible in as many ways as possible. Compatible means, if, again, as possible. Similar background, right? In many ways, in terms of what kind of family he's from, what kind of orientation. As similar as possible. You know, all things being equal, not always equal, it's something to look for. And parental input often emphasizes the family. I have to tell you all these true confessions. When I was your age, I always thought it was a joke. But what about the family for? You married a girl. What's the difference with the family? Every year that I got older and older, to see more and more, and pick up more and more pieces, I realized that, yes, the girl is the marriage. The marriage, the girl is the main thing. But the family is also very important. Very important. And they have so many ways, so numerous to mention. So, there are all kinds of exceptions and all kinds of situations. But if you can find a family which is similar to yours, and which can, quote-unquote, embrace you, take you in, it's something which is sort of the chatzilah. These are just, again, a few comments. We never opened the Gemara today, as someone predicted. But I think it's as important as the Gemara is also important, and even more important. You have to remember this. And I give you all a bracha. And the tefillahs should be answered. Those who are married, the tefillahs should have been answered. Those who are engaged, the tefillahs should have been answered. Those who are not yet engaged, will soon get engaged, the tefillahs should be answered. And those who are not even going out and they don't know where they are, what's happening, their tefillahs should be answered. And those who haven't started going out yet, start doubting. So their tefillahs should be answered as well.